Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Moric, oh, he took a risk, and Calvert-Lewin is there to score. What a ridiculous goal for Burnley to concede. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's luck is in again. Has had a nightmare.
We designed an ugly win and it worked, you know, because we played very well in games this season, dominated the XG, dominated factors of the game and not won. You know, they have a lad sent off, they should have another one sent off. We can't get them decisions at the minute. We should have a penalty. Jimmy Garner, identical to Dom's last week, which everyone said was a penalty, and we never got that. That's tricky, you know, that could kill that game off, and it doesn't. But we worked very hard to make sure that we see the game through, and in the end, they have one shot on target, so I'm pleased with the defensive side of things as well.
Hello, Blues. This is the Toffee Web Podcast, where we discuss all things Everton, and it's another day, another points deduction following the verdict from the Premier League's second independent commission into the club's breaches of profitability and sustainability rules. The Toffees have had another 2 points taken off their tally for the season, which means that they drop a place to 16th, having only just reclaimed 15th on Saturday with that rather ugly 1-0 win over Burnley. Everton plan to appeal this latest points deduction, and it's possible that any decision from that panel won't arrive until after the final match of the season, but we at least have a fairly good idea of what the team needs to do now over the final seven games. Andy and Adam are here, and Andy, I'll give you the first word to react to the news of the day, and that's Everton making history again by becoming the first team in English top flight history to be deducted points twice in the same season.
What an honour. Thank you so much for allowing me the floor. Different than last time, it feels. I remember where I was. It was a where were you moment, isn't it? Really, when I first read, I saw Everton deducted 10 points, and then I very much remember where I was when it says Everton's you know, deduction reduced to 6. Today was a bit more. I just kind of looked at my phone and I went, "Ooh, 2," and I didn't really know what to make of 2 as a value. I mean, because if it was 3 or 4 again, then there's an obvious reaction. If it was 0 or 1, somehow that's different. 2 just feels like in kind of no man's land in terms of the actual points and what it does to our season and what it does to the league table. I feel all of the emotions we've gone through so many times. I'm not sure I can bring anything massively new to the table in terms of how I feel about this process and how I feel about Everton, how they've been treated and how they've acted themselves in the last few years. What's clear is that this is not the sport, and I've said this before, but this is not the sport I fell in love with. This is not the sport I want it to be. And it feels like the Premier League, in a way, mirrors Everton, in that there's been this relatively recent, huge influx of money. And when there's a huge influx of money in any industry, in any business, in any thing, you kind of get one chance to get it right, because it can go wildly wrong with big money. And Everton haven't got it right. That's absolutely clear. And neither of the Premier League. They just haven't got a system in place to try to stop teams spending loads of money and running themselves into administration or debt, or just countries coming in and buying all the best players. They haven't got the system. Everton haven't had a system for years either. They probably have now, funnily enough, but it's too late. And it all boils down to all the millionaires that play for us, all the millionaires that have played for us in this time, all the millionaires that have been on the board, all the billionaires that are now in the game. It kind of boils down to, we feel it the most as fans, what they're doing. And I know this point, you know, these points have been made over and over again in the last few months, but it just today, I just feel like, well, who's reacting strongest to this? Who's feeling it most today? And of course it's us. And mm-hmm. It's just wrong. It's just so wrong that our hobby, our interest in life, that the bit that we do to get away from, I don't know, I haven't got anything terrible in my life, lucky enough to say, but, you know, to get away.
Despite this.
This is probably the worst. The thing we do to get away from the norm, you know, to take us into a different world, to make our imaginations run like it always has when, you know, we grew up as little boys watching football. It's not what I want it to be. And I'm in a really horrible place with football. And maybe today's the bit of the straw that broke the camel. But I'm in a really horrible place with it. That I watch an Everton game now, and like I did Saturday, we'll come on to that, I know. And it's no enjoyment. That's what's been created from this farce. I don't think anything I've just said is new. It just today just compounds it. And, you know, I got as much, if not more, joy than watching a Sunday league game on Sunday. I really did. And it was actually the same result, funnily enough. They won 1-0 as well. And I just thought, well, and yet, I want us to stay up. I want Everton to be in the Premier League. I want all those emotions I've always had. I'm just at a loss with it, really. And I know that hasn't really addressed the fact that, you know, specifically the 2 points, and I suppose, you know, how on earth they got to that this time, I don't know. But I'll let someone else try and make sense of that. I'm trying to make sense of how I feel about the game and how it's all kind of going at the moment. And it's not great.
It isn't, and it is very conflicting. And on the one hand, I'm very angry today, and it's relit that bit of a spark and made me really angry at the Premier League, at, as you say, this sort of new view we have of football where decisions away from a pitch really compound matters on it and affect us as fans. But then, as you say, I'm also very numb to it. I don't feel myself caring as much. I see the image of those Galatasaray players walking off a pitch and think that's probably where I'm at as a fan a lot of the time. Even when I'm watching the game, I kind of feel like I should walk away after 1 minute and go, nah, not today. Because as you say, this is escapism. This is something to take you away from the drudgery of your, you know, say your working week, and you go, it's the weekend, I'll watch football. That will provide some escapism. And we know that there's often more lows than highs with that. But this is beyond. This is just waiting on breaking news announcements on your phone, like it's you're awaiting kind of tragedy updates on the evening news. It's not what it should be about. And I was speaking to a Manchester United supporting a friend yesterday, more fool him, but he was saying, and different strokes, right? You know, middle class problems, if you will. He's sort of saying, but the thing that's really frustrating him is that a lot of his friends were saying, "Oh, you're going to bring in this director of football. You're going to bring in this sporting director from Man City." And he was like, "Well, I don't care about that. I care about what happens on the pitch." And with us, it's that, but to the nth degree of we're looking at accountants. We've spoken about our best signing this season being a super silk lawyer. We're dealing with a league that we play in and compete in that wanted to dock us not the six and then 2 points that we've been docked so far, but 17 points. 17 points. It's a farce. And this is a league that we were founder members of and actually fought to maintain its integrity while six of its best and brightest decided they'd up sticks and leave. It really is such a shame that we are having to spend so much of our headspace on matters off the pitch. And then we go the game and A, we're crap, by the way, and we'll definitely come on to that. Even when we win, we're crap. But also we spend some of that 90 minutes as well wondering, well, actually, will that be ruled out for offside? Was there a handball in the build-up? Did something happen 3 minutes ago that I didn't see, but someone saw and will never see during the game? And we'll have something to debate afterwards. And maybe someone who spends all their joyous football moments betting on how many thrones they've had enjoys it, but I certainly don't. I don't feel that connection to it as much anymore. But then, as I say, the flip side is it has kind of got that fire in my belly. I just wish that rivalry wasn't with the league, who should be upholding the game that we enjoy. I wish that rivalry was more with our fellow clubs, but in reality, it's not there. It's probably not with our City rivals. It's not really even with our relegation rivals, who I also feel quite sorry for. As a Luton supporter at this point in the season, you don't know where you stand. You don't know whether that game at home against Everton is going to be a six-pointer or a dead rubber, or who knows, because maybe in the summer Everton Stadium loan somehow has an impact on your survival. It's bonkers and very frustrating. And like you, Andy, I have not got a sensible answer to that very open-ended question, but if I can feel this deflated and angry when we've actually finally won a bloody game on a Saturday at 3 p.m, then God knows what would happen if we hadn't beaten Burnley, because I would be, I probably wouldn't be here on the pod, not in a living and breathing sense. Linden talk before I do something stupid.
I mean, it's hard to follow both of what you said, because it was so well put. It really kind of just encapsulates the farce that it's all become. And, you know, farce is an overused word at the moment among Evertonians, but that's pretty much what it's boiled down to. I mean, it's as I've said, look, we did breach. Some of it was due to stadium costs and the need for loans that we might not otherwise have taken out. A lot of it was down to rank mismanagement. I think we all agree that, we all admit that. But, I mean, you have the Premier League charging clubs according to clearly demarcated thresholds, But then these various commissions are operating under an inconsistent and arbitrary sanctions framework that's seen Everton handed twice the points deduction that Nottingham Forest have for essentially the same offence. I mean, as Joe McLarnon tweeted earlier, this commission disagreed with the Forest Commission, which disagreed with the Everton Appeal Commission, which disagreed with the original Everton Commission that deducted Everton 10 points. And then, of course, the Premier League originally wanted 12. And as you said, Adam, I mean, it could have amounted, had they had their way, to 17. And charged twice in the same season. Because, you know, they've worked very hard to shoehorn in two hearings for PSR breaches from two different financial years. Deducted points from us twice in the same season, as I said, and Manchester City's case won't be heard until the end of this year at the earliest. So now we know their case is a lot more complex than ours, but it doesn't change the fact that the 20 clubs are not all being treated the same. Everton could lose their Premier League status this season, which we've held for longer than City, let's remember. Now, this season, while City could go on and win another title. So yeah, as I say, a farce has become a bit of a cliche, but I mean, I don't know what other word you can use at this point.
It's so funny, isn't it, that after all of the Burnley stuff at the weekend, we kind of all turned around, I'm sure, as one and went, oh God, well, at least we won. Well, it kind of turns out we didn't.
Yeah.
It kind of turns out that game just ebbed away into a 0-0 and it didn't come off Calvert-Lewin's instep and go over the goalkeeper. It was just a point. I mean, that's where we are with it. And so even that small crumb, well, it wasn't a small crumb. It was we won and we have to win at the moment. But even that, that's just instantly been taken away 2 days later. I was thinking in the very first few moments I read Everton have been deducted 2 points. I thought, well, plus side here, glass half full, we've got some clarity. And then you read further on that there's another commission that will sit at some point.
I know.
And it probably won't be this season, but it might be next. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute. This is a competition, a sporting competition where teams get together every week and play against each other for points, and then it's displayed as who did best over the season. And yet, we've got no idea in that bit of the table, we've got no idea who's the best and who's done the best and who ultimately hasn't done the best at all. And so the very essence of what this thing is has been completely destroyed, because we've had to play games not knowing how many points we're going to have taken off us. We've had to play games thinking we've had 10. We've had to play games thinking we've only had 6. We now have to play games thinking, well, is that it? Or is there more? Forest have had the same, although in a very short time period. And like you said, Adam, other teams are now thinking, well, what are we playing for? How many points do we need? What is the outcome of the, or what's the purpose of the very point of us being here? Because, I mean, there isn't a better word than farce, but you want there to be another one, and I don't know what it is, but it's so far removed from what I hoped that we'd be talking about one of our favorite things, I'm sure, in our lives, on a podcast when we all get together and we talk about something that's, you know, an interest. It's so far removed from that, it's actually making me annoyed.
Yeah. And we're having the book thrown at us while it's being rewritten. So we're facing the most severe of punishments. We're being put out there as the cautionary tale to end all cautionary tales. Whatever you do, Icarus, don't fly too close to the sun. You know, whatever you do, don't spend over £20 million on Morgan Schneiderlin. This is what happens. This is where it leads. And then right at that moment where another side could maybe, you know, fall victim to that same fate, no, close the gate. And as you say, Lyndon, with City's case, it's a one that keeps getting bandied around. There's the likes of Chelsea as well, potentially in the future. But there are other sides, I'm sure, who would at some point fall victim because of all of the reasons that Evan have listed. And I'll give the club some crumb of credit based on, obviously, years of mismanagement. At least in these statements, they are robust and they do reflect, I think, the fans' point of view and come across written by someone capable, whoever that may be at this point. We don't know. That doesn't help. We've got a very opaque Premier League who don't provide any real assessment of the situation. It is quite laughable. And I saw our own Elle Bretland sharing a few of the Premier League's tweets over the course of today, which are so inane. You know, oh, the Premier League's in Nashville and they're having a real rocking time. And you think, what on earth is this? We keep saying it's farce. It's a sideshow. And we're sadly there being peddled out as the ones in the stocks to all have a giggle at. I don't think it's unfair to say that it affects other clubs negatively as well. I'm sure there are some who see it as kind of funny and some who would quite rightly say, well, yeah, we spent too much and we were badly mismanaged with our finances. We accept that, but this level of punishment, the handling of it and the continued uncertainty, even at this point, it's a joke, isn't it? And I'd say, luckily, we do have games still going on. This isn't, I don't know, in the COVID window where there's not a lot else happening and we're faced with all this uncertainty about what's next. But then, bloody hell, you go the game and it's not much better. You're still left scratching your head and wondering what on earth's happening here. So there's not a lot of respite, but at least that was addressed. And maybe in the same way that December saw a good run of results following that initial decision from a Premier League, maybe it wasn't an instant reaction, but we got some big wins in the month of December. Maybe we can see a similar thing here, just to at least make this season not as bad as it certainly could be, and it certainly for Premier League up the way it would be, because boy have we had it rough.
Yeah, I think we said it last week that we've had streaks under Deitch where we've gone these little groups of fixtures where everything looks like, oh, everything's gonna be fine, you know. Deitch is working wonders, and then things fall off a cliff and we go, you know, 13 games without winning. But let's turn to matters on the pitch, which is where finally things will mostly play out in the manner in which football is intended, we hope. Ours and Forest's tallies, they may move a point or two between now and, God knows, the end of May, but I doubt it. I think I'd be surprised if they move much at this point. I think, as we've said before, we have enough to go on now to know what we need to do in order to stay up. Of course, we finally ended that almost four-month wait for a Premier League win by edging Burnley on Saturday. Paul, who unfortunately had to dip out the last minute, his match report summed it up quite nicely, really. He said a poor game, but you take the win. Adam, you were there. What was your take on it all?
As I've alluded to, it was a pretty, pretty dire game of football. Not helped by the nerves for myself beforehand, because this was a six-pointer.
Yeah.
And as you'd expect, a lot of the conversation was, oh, how many points do you reckon? And 2-4 seemed to be the number. So that certainly has an effect on the game, I think, beforehand. We set up with Gomez in midfield. That was kind of exciting. We discussed that last week, didn't we? And I think I'm going to do positives first. I thought he had a decent game, looked after the ball, was pretty tidy. And it was nice to see someone at least attempting to keep the ball on the deck. And he played a few free balls, full stop. I thought Jared Branthwaite, very, very good, very composed, some great slide tackles, didn't really put a foot wrong all game. And Dom got a goal. And Dwight McNeil ran for a bit. And that's on the highlights. And that's about it, I would say. Considering how bad a side Burnley are, and I've seen some poor sides at Goodison this year. Certainly Palace just after sacking Hodgson were really poor. I think Chelsea before Christmas were really poor as well, albeit with some better individual players. West Ham under Moyes, poor. Bloody hell, Burnley are bad. Really, really bad. And considering how little we wanted to grasp the game and really make the most of it. Apparently this was some Dyche master plan to play up to the conditions. The weather wasn't that bad. It wasn't Stoke on a Tuesday. It was very windy. But when the most entertaining moments of the first half are probably where Jordan Pickford's trousers get blown towards the halfway line, that says a lot. We were just really, really wasteful. Dwight McNeil in that first half gave a ball away more times than I could count. Ashley Young is not a right winger in the Premier League, or dare I say it, probably the level below. And it was a real hard slog. And when that goal goes in, I had the boo was ready on my lips for half time. And
I don't think you were alone in that.
And you could feel everyone kind of getting ready for it, because there was no reason to get off your feet in that first half. And then lo and behold, it loops over their goalkeeper. The plan has worked. Dyche ball has been executed. And it was like a sigh rather than a celebration. And I mentioned McNeil's running, who I will give him his credit. Certainly in the second half, I thought he did better as he moved inside a little. And also, he didn't stop running all game, and he put his body on the line at various times, and he did a lot of the ugly things well. But it really says a lot about where we're at as a football club, and certainly under this manager, when the only thing that got us off on our feet was that aimless pressing from McNeil, which was great in isolation. But actually, Burnley kept the ball during that, and then I think won a corner. It didn't really. It wasn't necessarily a successful press. It wasn't organised. It wasn't in any way a tactical masterclass. It was one person trying to give the crowd something in the same way that Phil Neville had sometimes thrown a slide tackle. Except this was just running. And if that's where we're at, if that's the standard, then I really do worry about us going into other must-win matches. But hey, that same running from McNeil got Burnley a man sent off, which again we didn't take advantage of. It all felt very bright and away, and we sat deep. And for a side as impotent as Burnley are, who just never looked like scoring, we made life unnecessarily nervy for ourselves. Should we have had at least one penalty at the end? Probably. I thought Beto's wasn't. I thought he completely overran it, and it was a 50-50. You've seen them given, but I don't think so. I thought Garner's was, and certainly compared to other decisions we've seen, like the Garnacho penalty given against us and some of the others over the weekend as well. A bad decision, but luckily didn't count for much. Even at the full-time whistle, there wasn't really... And it does come across in the highlights, because I wanted to know if that was just in the top balcony, but it was like a sigh. It was just like a... rather than a wall of noise that you'd expect for a 1-0 win where the Burnley players are out on their feet and looking very much like a relegated side. I'm glad we won, but it was incredibly hard work. I felt as though I'd done a few aimless sprints myself by the end of it. And I hope that Dom scoring and the 3 points on the board gives us that bit of a push going into these next couple of games, albeit a tough game away against Chelsea. That feels like the game in hand, but it's not really the game in hand. But we need to be a lot better. We need to make more of our chances on the break. That template that we've never really seen put into action from Brighton away that we always talk about, which shows you again how poor and how thin on the ground we are for moments over yep. the last couple of years. It's just not happened, has it? But the amount of times where we got into good positions and there was either a complete lack of movement or a bad decision, or overrunning the ball and just really not making the most of the opening, certainly against 10 men. We'll need to do that against some of the sides who are coming to Goodison, the likes of Brentford and Forest. So happy with the win, but clearly not very happy with the performance. How was it watching for you guys? What did you reckon, Andy?
It was an awful watch. It was probably the most nervous watch I've had since the Bournemouth game at the end of last season. It felt like that kind of game. I thought we started the game quite well. And I remember saying actually out loud to myself, started well. After about 12, 13 minutes, I thought, well, we're kind of trying to push the right buttons here. But then we kind of rattle ourselves through really poor decision-making and poor execution. So Everton, you know, get on the front foot. You actually win the ball back a little bit, get a corner, get a shot away, blah, blah, blah. And then when nothing happens, the players seem to retreat into this very poor, sometimes very safe, sometimes very hesitant decision-making mode. And that then starts to rattle the crowd. And that then starts to kind of give the opposition a little bit of encouragement. And Burnley, all right, they're poor, but what they can do is pass a football. And as they start beginning to pass a little bit, and we've said this about teams before, how we almost give them a chance to get into the game. But as soon as they started doing that, and I think the feeling watching it from an Everton point of view was, well, if Burnley can do this, surely we can put five passes together. And it kind of just then snowballs. And it kind of got me thinking of the prism we're watching all this through. Is
prism or prison?
I thought you said prison to begin with.
The prism with an M that we're all watching this through is the wrong one. I mean, Everton are actually a team that have as many wins as Luton and Sheffield United combined this season. You know, we are not a team that on points alone really, really have to beat Burnley at home at this point in the season. We're watching all this through a very weird lens because of, obviously, all the stuff we've just spoken about. But it still affects everything and everybody and every decision a player makes. I thought there's not much more I can add to it in terms of individual performances. I thought Young was awful. I thought Mikalenko actually defended very well. That's one thing I did notice myself. Even in the first half, there were a few positional things that I thought, oh, it is lovely to have a left-back playing at left-back. And he made a difference. But I think the most... obviously, the best bit about the game, really, was that we scored a goal and we won it. But we didn't even get the goal moment. You know, that wasn't like, remember Decore's volley against Bournemouth, the whole place lifts and the roof lifts off and there's this like, whoa, amazing. Wow. And you kind of enjoy, if you can, that moment. We didn't even have that because the goal was so weird that I don't think half the stadium actually really realised what was happening. I certainly didn't watching. I kind of was just saying to myself, oh, half time, this is rubbish. And I almost got to get up and then kind of put my hands on my head and said, we've scored. And there was no celebration. I didn't celebrate the goal at all. And so you haven't even really got that from it, which I think was probably added to the, you didn't have the euphoria, you know, the euphoric moment. I thought Branthwaite was great. I thought Gomez did exactly what I wanted him to come in and do, whether it was by hook or by crook in the end, because obviously Onana and Garner were both missing for different reasons. I don't know whether he would have started him, but I'm really glad he did. And I'm glad he lasted 90 minutes because he is still a player that can do something that none of our other midfielders can. I thought he looked great, to be honest, Gomez. And if he's got legs around him, there's no reason that he can't be our Yerry Mina of this season, where we just kind of prop him up for six games and say, please give us what you can. Until you leave here. So yeah, I mean, you know, all of that, great. And I'm completely with you on the McNeil running. I mean, the club have reposted it again today. Burnley actually got through that quite easily and made a chance out of it. And we're celebrating someone, I mean, literally running around. I mean, bless him. He didn't have a great game. He was trying to get himself into the game, which is great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as if he ran down three players and eventually got it and got us a corner or something. It was it had no impact on the game at all. I'm with you. For us to be celebrating that, wow. But we won the game, and we had to win the game. We had to. So, especially knowing what we know now, we had to win the game and did. So that's the only tick I can put in the box, really.
When does the DVD come out of Dwight McNeil running? It's like the new exercise class. Can you keep up with Dwight? I mean, for the official account to be celebrating that, I mean, it really does show where we are, unfortunately. I mean, Adam, as you were talking, you were just kind of just checking off all the points that I've kind of made in my notes. It's which is obvious because it's just where we are. It's everything is so predictable. I mean, it was an awful watch. It was terrible. And I, like you, Andy, I mean, part of it's VAR, and obviously VAR didn't play any part in our goal. But I don't celebrate goals anymore because most of the time I'm so angry with the team that it's like, yes, now go and build on it, go and do something with it. You know, I said to myself, take the gift now and don't squander it. Now, thankfully they didn't, but I mean, it was a much closer run thing than it should have been in terms of the scoreline. Obviously Burnley hardly tested us at all, and I think from that perspective, you know, it's a little weak that we only got the one goal, particularly against 10 men. But hey, you know, the situation that we're in, and I think where confidence is, you know, we can't moan too much about that. The 3 points was paramount, however they arrived. And Deitch made the same point after the match. You know, he said that they deliberately played the way they played. I mean, Sean, we've been playing like that for a long time now, for weeks now. So to say that you suddenly adopted a long ball game to play ugly and unsettle an opponent is a bit disingenuous, because we've been playing like that for weeks now, and it's horrendous to watch. You know, it was embarrassingly one dimensional at times. You know, with just Pickford just looking up and just punting it long. Obviously, with the wind, was either a good thing with the wind or a bad thing, depending on which way the wind was blowing, because often it would just go straight through to the goalkeeper. And then, well, that was worth it, because now we're just going to give it straight back to Burnley. You know, I'm not sure we'll win another game this season if we play like that, given that we would have to be a lot better against the likes of Forest and Brentford, who are better teams than Burnley by some considerable measure, actually. You know, hopefully, I think... Morgan Gibbs-White went off against Spurs with a hamstring injury, and he's the one player I'm hoping, you know, he's got a couple of weeks to recover, but I'm hoping that he won't be available for that game, because he really makes Forest tick. And obviously they've got, you know, Chris Wood, who's that kind of player who's going to score, you know, that kind of goal against us if we're not careful. So we have to be a lot better. But I think, as you said, Adam, I'm hoping that this can be a catalyst to provide some much needed confidence, because I think confidence is at the root of the problem, not only in the way that results haven't been going for us, but I think there's been some allusions to this made in some of the media articles that there's a lack of faith from some players in what Deitch is trying to do. And I think you're seeing that. So if you can get some confidence into the veins, that I think is going to be crucial, because, you know, I think, I think it's behind a lot of our issues. For example, I mean, how do you square the Dwight McNeil that we saw against Brighton last season, or at Forest earlier this season, for example, and the one we're seeing now when he's in dangerous areas of the pitch? I mean, he's bereft of any self-belief when the ball is at his feet at the moment, and it's almost tangible. Same was almost true of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but you're starting now just on the back of that performance against Burnley, that a little of his self-confidence is coming back. You know, he created that one chance for himself, which unfortunately didn't go in, but, you know, he was very single-minded about the fact that he was going to run across that box and try and get a shot off. So hopefully that starts to spread to the rest of the players who have been struggling, because, again, we have to be better against the likes of Forest and Brentford, because those are the two games, I think, if we win those two, and again, as I said at the outset, we don't lose to Luton, then I think we probably have done enough. But they are, you know, they're big games. And again, you don't really want to be relying on those two games, because as we've seen, you know, Everton at home with the pressure on them is not always the best situation. But let's use this as a springboard, as a platform.
Yeah, and we have been saying for weeks that in terms of Dominic, it needed to be a kind of lucky goal, you know, a Beto-esque one off your shoulder, off your arse, and however it goes in. And in the space of a week, it's one penalty which could easily have been saved. And now, which it was kind of classed as good pressing, but really he didn't have to do much. It's a pretty dreadful mistake from our goalkeeper. Yeah. And really, we should have had more than enough to keep him at arm's length, which we did for most of the game. You're right, Andy. I thought Mykolenko played well. And surprisingly, they seemed to try and target that left-hand side for a lot of the game, Burnley, even though our right-hand side is, well, old enough to be a grandmother, isn't it? So it's that's exactly where I would be looking to if I was a, you know, a pacey winger, which Burnley do have. They just don't really have a lot of other threats. But as you say, Lyndon, the sides we're coming up against, Brentford and Forest, obviously Chelsea before that, they do have pace. They do have tricky players. They do have good movement. I think our centre-backs did well, but again, didn't really have to do a lot. I thought Branthwaite made some good interceptions and brought the ball out nicely. I've got to say, I was really disappointed with Decore again, who's been looking really ragged. And I think it's nice to see Calvert-Lewin improving, but it would be nice to have the two of them kind of firing to offer that dual threat, to offer some extra running in behind, because he was wasteful at the weekend. And as you say, McNeil was wasteful. But again, we've not got, it's not as if there's someone else there to kind of either come on and change things up, or really anyone else on the other side, because Harrison came on and was quite safe, didn't really add much to us. I did actually have that thought of, would Damari Gray offer something in this side as opposed to, but then, you know, before you know it, you're going back through the roster and thinking, oh, well, coulda, woulda, shoulda. But I would expect, yes, at some of those plays, I think Garner as well, worth mentioning him, because he did a lot of the running that Gomez probably couldn't. And I'd say he did okay. It was a 6, maybe a 7 out of 10. Did a lot of sensible things, but did a lot of the ugly stuff quite well. It'll be interesting to see whether Gomez can play another 90, or whether he's the right player to play against Chelsea. That's maybe another question. But I do think making the most out of him, besides hitting the first man for a set piece, which I think my record with bigging someone up on a set piece is never good. and saying, oh, it'll be great to have someone else on set pieces straight away, first man. Could have seen it coming a mile off. But I do think he gives us some quality, and there really isn't a lot of quality in that team, but there's enough in that spine with Branthwaite and Tarkowski, and I'd certainly add Mykolenko into that as well. Seamus is getting minutes as well, which is good. And then you start to work through it and go, actually, if Calvert-Lewin's making those runs, if Beto, dare I say it, is, if not really adding much, is making the runs, then things might start to fall for us. But there needs to be a lot more against those sides. I don't think there'll be many sides easier to play than Burnley this season. We'll need a lot more. And we'll definitely need a lot more against Chelsea because, yeah, they've got players who can hurt you.
McNeil's quite sensitive, isn't he? You can tell that from his kind of demeanour and his personality. And I think at this stage, again, through no fault of their own this season, you kind of need some characters in there that it maybe isn't the biggest thing they've ever been through, if you see what I mean, from a footballing perspective, which I think is why Gomez is just a bit of a breath of fresh air. He'll quite happily risk making a mistake by trying to do something right. I think too many of our players, again, in some ways through no fault of their own this season, because they should be way above the relegation zone and not even thinking about it really, but they are, they're in there. And I think a few of them go back inside themselves, where you can see the likes of Branthwaite, which is probably where he's going to go and play at a really good level. He just plays. He's the same every week. He just does what he does. To an extent, Idrissa Gueye kind of does what he does. You know, it's that kind of. Jordan Pickford tends to do what he does. It's just those players that we've got that we haven't really got an option to take out of the side that can't quite seem to cope. And I say that, McNeil was brilliant in the run-in last season. Hmm. But I just thought that on... I was watching him on Saturday. He just seems as... he seems to be affected by it this year. I don't know why it's any different than last year, but... because last year he was the one that saved us, really, wasn't he? I agree about Decore. I thought Gomez was going to play as the 10, and Decore would kind of drop back a little bit deeper to kind of give us some legs with Garner. But I don't really know what Decore brought to the party on Saturday. And I mean, as for Beto had...
Beto is Beto, isn't he?
I know, but sometimes you can see the footballer in Beto. I remember earlier in the season when he played against Sheffield United away from home, and he was winning flick-ons and he was kind of, shielding the ball. And I thought, oh, okay, I know what kind of player we've got here. But I mean, there was nobody I would have wanted to have seen race onto that through ball any less than Beto, because you just knew something. It was never going to be a straightforward. He's going to get onto this. He'll keep the right side of the defender, and he'll probably just slot it. It was never going to happen, was it? And, you see good players week in, week out, match of the day. They get in that position and there's no other outcome. But I just knew something weird was going to happen. And it did. And I didn't think that was a penalty. Beto won. I really didn't. Or a free kick, wherever it happened. I don't think it was even a foul. The Garner one, I thought it's very similar to ones that have been given recently. Although I think what went against him is he was facing away from goal, wasn't he? Kind of. He wasn't really facing. If he'd been attacking the fullback or attacking the defender facing forward and gets a little clip, I think it's easier for the referee to give. He was kind of in a bit of a weird position, got swiped, and I don't know, but I thought that might have been given.
I saw him as coming back, sort of trying to turn the defender a bit like Kobbie Mainoo did for United yesterday. He was trying to get onto his shooting foot and was caught. And, I mean, for me, as I've said before, that I think that the bar for a penalty should be higher than it is. But when penalties are given for challenges like that, like they were for Garnacho United, like Liverpool got yesterday for a fellow who just literally ends up tripping over an outstretched leg, deliberately or otherwise, then I think... the one at Bournemouth and the one yesterday should have been given I don't even know if it's the letter of the law. Maybe it's the letter of the law. It shouldn't be by the spirit of the law. But as I say, if the penalties have been given to other teams, then we should be treated equally. So on that one, for Beto, I agree. It might have been a foul, but I think, and as I think we saw it, was at Bournemouth as well, where he went down the left flank and as soon as he felt contact on his shoulder, he kind of flailed to the ground, didn't get anything. I think he's looking for free kicks and penalties too much. Just stay on your feet. And I find that screaming. I almost tweeted it in massive capitals. Just stay on your bloody feet, because so many times our players are going to ground when they don't need to.
If he stays on his feet, though, he might have to use them. That's for worry about.
There is that. Yes.
He did it at Newcastle as well.
Yeah.
In the left channel, he was actually...
Maybe that's the game I'm thinking of, yes, at Newcastle.
He got himself into a really good position. Okay, yeah. not through on goal, but he was in a really good position. I was like, oh, we're actually attacking. Oh, yeah. And he could have easily stayed on his feet.
That's exactly the incident I was thinking of. Yes, thank you. So, I mean, but he is... I mean, he's a bit of an agent of chaos. He comes on and things happen. Whether he intends them to or not, things do happen. I think I would have liked to have seen him come on and partner Calvert-Lewin just for those last, because given that they were down to 10 men, I know it hasn't worked before, but I think the more you kind of play them together, you can create a kind of foundation for when you do need to, because there might be occasions when we do need to. But I think the decision to start Calvert-Lewin was right. And I think that obviously he will keep his place going to Chelsea now that he seems to be on a bit of a run. I thought Branthwaite was exceptional. I think head and shoulders the best player on the pitch for me. I thought as you fellas have said, I didn't want to see Ashley Young in the lineup, but he was there, and he's just not a winger. You know, he's not a winger. In that sense, the way that Harrison's been playing, it's hard to disagree with it. I'm hoping that Danjuma is fit by the time we go to Chelsea, so that at least there's an option there off the bench. You know, you can. It's just as I said before, it's a different option to both Young and Harrison. James Garner was fine. I thought Gomez, I just like him further forward. I think I said on the last pod, because this would be my concern with him starting against Chelsea, is when we're chasing games or we're chasing the opposition round, Gomez tends to get himself into trouble. He tends to make silly fouls outside of his area. So if he's playing further forward, I'm fine with it. But I'm hoping that by that point, Onana's back, Idrissa Gueye's back, and the options that I talked about last week and us having in central midfield, we actually have. And I mean, if we can play the way that we did away at the likes of Spurs earlier in this season, then we can get something at Chelsea, because Chelsea are, they're fallible, as we Sheffield United proved yesterday. You know, they're a funny team, and you know, I think their fans are just waiting to have a go at Pochettino and their team right now. So there's definitely an opportunity there. I just don't have much confidence the way that we're playing right now. We're going to be able to sort of ruffle their feathers in the way that I'd like them to. But I think we can certainly come away with something from Chelsea. And at this point, every point, given our goal difference, every point is really important.
Well, I think we've got to remember as well. I mean, we are here saying, oh, when Burnley went down to 10 this, when Burnley went down to 10 that. Well, they went down to 10 at Chelsea and ended up coming back and getting something.
Yeah,
against what is a much better football team, fortunately, than Everton at the moment. So I know it's frustrating that, I mean, you could argue we did the same at Brighton when they went down to 10 men, and that day we didn't quite get it all right. This was against not as good a side, but apart from the Brownhill turn and shot, which I mean could have gone anywhere, that's a bit of a kind of a snapshot which can happen. They didn't create anything. And so I think I was frustrated at the time watching it, thinking, come on, Everton, surely we can keep the ball a bit better than this against 10 men. But it worked. And as they said in commentary, Chelsea, you know, Burnley had the same scenario last week and actually played better with 10 and actually got something out of the game. And that could have quite easily happened if we hadn't defended quite so well. So, yeah, I think we've got to remember that. If we get a little bit frustrated, it did work, and you can only go on whether it works or not. And it did.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And we do pass the ball nicely, but it was just frustrating, particularly those moments on the break. I think going into an away game against a Chelsea, where you would expect us to soak up more of a possession and then look to hit them on the break. We've said countless times on this podcast, that's probably the way we should be best set up to play, when you've got players with McNeil's running, Decore's athleticism, when you've got someone like Calvert-Lewin or Rebeto if he's starting up front. And we're usually pretty solid at the back. So if we can soak that up and play on the break, great. But the issue is, if you then have a wide option like Ashley Young, who consistently slowed the ball down at times on Saturday. And I'll give him some credit. I thought he came out in the second half and performed better. But that wasn't that difficult to do, because he stank the place out in the first half. And likewise, McNeil didn't hide, as I mentioned before, despite how many wasteful opportunities he was kind of presented with. But I'd like to see something different on the break. I'd like to see us maybe take that example from Gomez, who, and this is probably where you're right, Lynn, in terms of playing him that little further forward, because, yes, really cynical booking from him. And also, he just has that extra touch on the ball, has that extra little moment, just takes his time and plays not always the right pass, but usually something a bit progressive and a bit different. Whereas some of the others, which is understandable given the confidence issues and often a chronic lack of movement as well, it's got to be said, they will make bad decisions. They'll either have a wasteful shot or just run it down a blind alley, or worse, it goes back, Pickford, long ball, que sera, sera. So I think against Chelsea, it'd be nice to see something different in that aspect. I think the issue with Dyche is, even in a game where different variables turn up, like, oh God, we're actually winning, or, oh God, we're down to 10 men, the same thing happens. Let's wait as long as possible to make a substitute. If something's not working, let's let it play out until it continues to carry on not working and then still do nothing about it. That's the worry, that we won't learn from, yes, you're right, Andy, that there are positives to take, and sometimes playing a cyber 10 can be tricky for various reasons, but there's that sense that he's maybe not going to learn from that against Chelsea, and will probably go with, oh, I've got a win inside, let's keep things the same. That might not be the worst thing to do against Chelsea, who offer more threat, and maybe Ashley Young filling in a bit more makes more sense. But I can't help but feel, and again, ad nauseum, how many times, that could be my new nickname, ad nauseum, how many times have we said, surely Patterson is a better option as that kind of advanced right back, really, if we're not playing wingers and we're essentially playing kind of a left.
It's never going to happen.
I know.
I would love to see it tried, it's never going to happen.
it's frustrating, because I think his legs, his running, and also his deliveries as well.
Yeah.
It makes such a difference to have two people who can beat a man. And Ashley Young, his one move is just to try and carve out a little bit of room on his right foot, which at his age, he rarely finds that room. So the best you can hope for is it goes out for a corner. And you saw the difference on the other side. Mikalenko, the few times he did venture forward, would put a decent ball in the box. So it would be great to have an option against Chelsea, but I can't see him changing the side much. And it probably is, as you both allude to, really, it's probably going to be around that central area where we do change things up a bit. I could see, depending on Anana's fitness, Garner coming in for probably Gomez, even though I think the right decision might be to take Decore out the side, give him a bit of a rest, and then bring him on as an impact sub if we're chasing a game, or if it's close and we feel like we can nick a win. Wouldn't that be nice? Then that would be a sub that would offer something different, as opposed to what we tend to do, which is a straight swap, more of the same and a bit of disappointment. But I do think we could sneak a point in the same way we got one at Newcastle. I think Chelsea are good, but we all know they're not great. And I think a point would be a good result in what is essentially a free hit, if we're looking at a game in hand and the fact that Luton play Man City before this game. We've then got our other game in hand against You Know Who, which, again, is a free hit. As long as we win those games that count, hopefully anything next Monday and thereafter is a bit of a bonus.
I've just tallied up, today I've been tallying up where we've been in the last three seasons at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have we got? 7 to go? Is that right?
7, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, obviously, technically, we've got 35 points this season, but let's say we've got 27, which is what it says on the league table. We're 16th. Last year, we just lost 3-1 at home to Fulham, which I had the pleasure of being at. We also had 27 points. We were in 17th. We were only out of the relegation zone on goal difference at that point. Now, we're healthier than that. In 21-22, we'd just drawn 1-1 at home to Leicester when Richarlison got the last gasp equaliser. That season, we had 29 points at this stage. And we were actually 4 points above Burnley in the relegation zone. But then, of course, they went and won twice on the trot, didn't they? Which kind of threw the whole thing into complete turmoil. So, but if you look at that, I mean, we are in a better position, really, because Burnley had games in hand. We're in a better position than we have been in the last two seasons, despite having 8 points taken off us, and despite all of the stuff we've been talking about how it's affected the players, affected the fans, affected the games, affected the opposition, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, under Ancelotti at this point, we were eighth on 49 points. Well, if you consider we've got 35 technically, you know, we're kind of a halfway house from where we've been under Lampard and Benitez and whoever else to Ancelotti. I took some heart from that, because even though it feels bad, technically we've been here before and we are in a better position, really, in terms of points, in terms of goal difference, and in terms of games left. You know, you look at what Luton have got coming and you look at what we've got coming. You know, like Lyndon said, we've got to not lose to Luton and we've got to pick up those two home games, home wins. And I'm going to one of them and I'm already dreading the stress. I'm just dreading it. But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting comparison. It might feel bad and it might feel downtrodden, but we have got out of much worse than this.
Yeah. True. I should add that we've also got the home game against Sheffield United, which I forgot about. But you know, if we don't get the job done against one of the other two, then at least we have that.
I hope.
Me too, because that's the penultimate game, and we know we're not going to get anything at Arsenal on the final day. I mean, that is as nailed on a home win as you can get in the Premier League these days, unless something truly miraculous happens. But well said, fellas. We'll leave it there. Tune in, Blues, next week, when hopefully we'll have Paul back and we can discuss all the events that go on at Chelsea. Hopefully we will be cheering on at least a point, and things will feel a bit more rosy than they do now after the latest episode of the Premier League shenanigans. But until then, Blues, thanks again for listening. Take care as always, and up the Toffees.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.